He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys. Baby, you can drive my
car. Good morning, this is Jada Markin, and with me again this week, Alice Peck, and this is Car Keys. I ran into Alice at Lime Rock this weekend, as we, I guess, were both there separately for FCP Euro's first car show of the year. FCP Euro is one of the partners of Lime Rock Park, and they are a auto parts supplier based here in Connecticut, and have been a very active partner with Lime Rock Park since the new owners took over a couple of years ago. This year, they will have, I believe, only four car shows. They are branching out, and I just found out, doing events out in Arizona and California. And that's a bit of a shame, but they are great car shows. The company started by selling parts for Saab and Volvos. And the first show of the year, there's always a theme, a brand that is the feature brand of the show, or feature brands. And in this case, the show was entitled Super Suites. It's a Sunday event at the park, so obviously there's no on-track activity. All the cars are parked on the track. And I don't even know if they charge an entry fee, do they?
They do not. It's totally free. You just have to sign a waiver when you get there.
Yeah, and the shows run from 9 to 12. I think the next one is sometime in June. I think it's the second weekend in June. I'm not entirely sure. But anyway, so I was working there, so I didn't get a chance to walk the show all that much. But Alice, what did you see? What did you think of things?
I think they're great. This is my second year of going to these events. I grew up going to Lime Rock, and I am most familiar with the Memorial Day weekend events and the Labor Day weekend events, but I think it's a great thing for the park to have these intermediary car shows and car meets where people can bring the marquee cars, but also the car, any car that they want, and park it in the paddock for anyone to see.
So what in the marquees, in the Volvos and Saabs, did you notice the Saab that never was, the sedan, I forget it, what, 9,000 or 9,005, 9,006?
I did see that. That was very cool.
So this is a little bit of history. The Saab brand no longer exists. As a car manufacturer, Saab does not exist. They are also, I believe, are still an aircraft manufacturer back in Sweden. But Saab Cars was bought by GM just before the 2008 recession. And when all hell broke loose back in 2008, one of the first things GM did was kill the Saab brand just as this new car was coming on the market. And it's a big sedan. It looks a little awkward, and there are very few of them, but it was there, and it was the last one there, the last representative of the brand. It was also an old 9 Series. Did you see the?
I did.
Yeah, and the Saabs at the time, they had two-stroke engines, if I recall, way before your time. a bunch of cool Volvos.
Yes, so something I was thinking about the whole time is how the older Volvos and the newer Volvos look good together. You can see clear design cues that Volvo has stuck with throughout their whole history, and they've remained entirely consistent with their design. And I think, you know, sometimes you go to these shows and you see an older version of a car and a newer version, and they just don't look very good together. But this, there was, you could see the consistent theme.
Although, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, for many years when you were a kid and when I was younger, you know, we thought of Volvos as big, boxy, safe cars, which they were. But if you look at the 140 that became the 240 series Volvo were very square, but the models preceding that, the original models, the 121 series before that, was actually very rounded. And the one before that, 544, which I think is the original Volvo,
you believe so,
was totally round. It was like a hunchback looking car. And have you seen the one that's at one of the local shops here in town in Salisbury? I don't know if it's still there, the yellow one.
I have not seen that one.
I haven't seen it in recent years. Maybe it's still there. We'll have to ask the owner if he still owns that car. So, yeah, Volvos were pretty cool. How did you like that 850 turbo race car?
The 850 turbo race
project car
is a very cool, very cool car. And I know that Paul Newman used to have an 850 turbo that he used to drive around this area.
Paul Newman also used to have, and he was a part owner in a Volvo dealership, but Paul Newman used to have a seven series with what was a common swap engine swap at the time with the Mustang V8 engine and a stick shift in it. And that was a pretty easy swap to do back in the day, and there are a bunch of those cars around. I didn't see any yesterday, but again, I didn't really walk the show. Outside of the Volvo and Saab sphere, what else caught your attention yesterday?
There were a lot of Porsche GT4s in the parking lot.
Only one?
There were about four.
What was the unique car you saw?
Oh, the unique car that I saw was a DeLorean.
And so what do you remember? You don't remember what years DeLorean came out. So
no,
DeLorean was, I think, in the early 80s. So we all remember DeLorean, the DeLorean, famous through the, what was the movie?
Back to the Future.
Yeah, with Michael
J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox. Anyway, that car was kind of futuristic looking. I think all of us a little older remember the car very well. I actually saw it live a few decades ago in Europe in a movie theater. It was being showcased. But the DeLorean seems to be back in style. You see them pop up for sale every now and then. I know there's a company out there that specializes in selling DeLorean parts and buying back cars and just consolidating the supply of parts needed to keep them up and running. The one you saw yesterday from a distance, but I've seen a couple up close. They have one common thing with the Cybertruck, right?
Yes, they both have the stainless steel paneling.
Yep, not painted, bare,
brushed
stainless steel. So anyway, the big problem with the DeLorean at the time was it was totally underpowered. It had a Peugeot V6 engine, I think, and the 80s were probably the worst of the years. Those were the years where we started having catalytic converters, and engines had lost a lot of power. I think of Ferraris back in the 80s were slow as molasses. In the early 80s, they rectified that since, obviously. The car was slow, and they contracted with a company here in New York to build turbo versions, and there were a handful of turbo powered DeLoreans at the time, and DeLorean was claiming they were faster than a Porsche 928 at the time or Ferrari 308, but DeLorean got busted for drug trafficking, and that was the end of DeLorean. But it's an interesting story, nevertheless.
I think the newfound interest in the DeLorean goes back to a thing where younger people feel more inclined to like the aesthetics of 80s cars, which is something that I talk about a lot with people who are older, because most of them cannot understand my affinity for an 80s style vehicle. But I think those of us who did not live in the 80s feel like...
Well, we all know what your favorite 80s car is, right? You can tell us. It's no big secret at this point.
I very much enjoy a Buick Grand National, a 1987 Buick Grand National, which is very much, in my opinion, a car of the 80s, even though I did not live in that time.
So back to the car show for just a second or two here. What were the demographics? I mean, we talked about this very briefly earlier. The people at the track, the people with their cars.
It's a lot of younger people that are at these events for FCP Euro. I'd say the main demographic is 20 to 30 year old car enthusiasts, which is a very different thing from what Lime Rock used to be. These car shows, in my memory, were a lot of the older crowd, but I've seen in the past couple years a newfound interest in cars with a younger crowd.
So you're telling me there's still hope for your generation?
Absolutely.
You're not going to kill cars altogether?
No.
Well, that's good news. It is good news. I mean, you know, sometimes we worry, we see people, we meet younger people who get in cars, they barely know how to put the car in drive. Some of them don't know how to put the car in reverse, but then again, well, who am I to say? A lot of new cars, I can't find reverse. We could talk about that, too. That's a problem. I'd say the younger crowd... spends a lot of time, you know, working on their cars, but they're not really interested in racing as much as the older crowd. And I think this is one of the things Lime Rock has discovered, that, you know, the racing crowd is an older crowd. You go to SCCA events and other race series and track days, and you see people my age. The track has been trying to attract a younger crowd, and we've seen, you know, FCP shows, we've seen drifting events last year, we saw MiataCon, so the track is trying to bring some of these car events to the venue, and again, it can work really well because, as we know, there's no racing at Lime Rock on Sundays, and a bunch of these events can be run on an entire weekend, Saturday, Sunday, so... there's hope.
There is hope. Absolutely.
Yeah, we talked about a totally other... Interior design. We talked about interior design. I don't know how we got to that. I had read an article or two about the best interior design in cars just a week or two ago, and then Alice, you popped up and said, "Oh, I have interest in that." And so, what's your take on what spikes your interest in that?
Well, I studied interior design in school, and I think there's a lot of overlap between interest in home interiors and with car interiors, because those are two places where you spend a lot of time. My feeling is that cars have gotten more complicated in their interiors than is entirely necessary. I have the feeling that when you enter a car, even if it's a new car or a car that you're renting, you should be able to figure out how it works without having to look at the manual. And that relates to the interior.
Yeah, so I see two components. I mean, three components. For me, interiors are, like you said, it's a place we live in. Some of us spend quite a bit of time inside a car. You don't really see the outside of it, so it doesn't really matter what the outside looks like. It's like your house. If it's painted pink or green, it doesn't. You don't see it. Other people may and have an opinion, but the interior of a car is an interesting place. But I see that, you know, there's the looks, the feel, and the comfort and the functionality of it all. I mean, those are like four things that I think are variables that should all come together. And in some cars they do, and in some not at all. I know Volvo, and I drove one last night. I spent a lot of time last night in a Volvo. Volvo interiors have become really, really nice. And I think you know of one or two particularly that you've seen in your parents' fleet of cars.
Absolutely.
And I think there's a constant because between the XC, I think it all started with the new interiors started like with the XC90 that came out in 2016-17. And the theme is still very much the same. It feels good, feels rich, well, it doesn't squeak or creak, which to me is really important. The seats are very comfortable, but I do have a problem with the functionality of that center screen. And I know Volvo's made some adjustments, but and to your point, you were saying you get in the car and you should be able to figure out how things work.
Yeah, you should be able to get in and see the odometer and see the speed and be able to make changes to your seat position and the steering wheel position without having to get the manual out to figure out how to do these.
So you work in tech. So should car functions work similarly to phones and computers?
I do not necessarily think they should. I think there is a limit to how much one person can intake that kind of information. And I think that the car should be more of a utility as the phone should be more of a utility. I think when you can have the option to make things more complicated, but for a basic everyday user, it should be simple.
Okay, so just like your phone, you should be able to pick up your phone and dial a number without any problems.
Exactly.
And it should be the same thing with a car. Get
yeah.
in and start. I agree. But I also think that, you know, things have become more complicated. The tech in cars is really impressive. And I think that cars are like phones and computers, you would know. People use them at a fraction of their capabilities, and that really is a shame. let me ask you something, because I find it that you go in a dealership and you buy a new car, and the salesperson or the techie guy person spends an hour with you in the car, and then you're free to go, and just like a computer or your phone, you've forgotten 90% of what they just told you, and then you never figure it out again. But you bought a new car, when was it, last year?
Yeah.
What was your, of course it was a Subaru. It was simple, right? They are simple.
It's very simple. The only difference between the Subaru and the car I had previously is that the Subaru has Apple CarPlay, because I, before, did not have a screen in my car. And so figuring out how to sync my phone with the Apple CarPlay was something I had to learn, even though it's something that should come naturally to me.
But you still had to spend some time on it.
I still had to spend some time on it. Before, I could just plug in my phone to the cigarette lighter, and it would pair with the Bluetooth speakers. But this was something that takes a little bit more.
So when you bought your car, did somebody go through this with you?
Yes. They had to show me all of the functions and buttons and things to get to these different screens for my phone to be able to be paired with my car.
And was it the salesperson in person, or was it a techie whose job it is solely to get you going in the car?
This was the salesperson at the Subaru dealership who showed me how to do this. But I did have to refer to the manual to figure out how to get it to be completely compatible.
And there's a manual with like a physical manual with.
Yes.
You don't have to go into sub menu and.
No, but sometimes you do have to look up a YouTube video.
Well, that's the great thing about YouTube. You can pretty much figure out pretty much anything, right? These cars get very complicated. One of the nicest features I find is the auto-dimming headlights. Do you have that on the Subaru?
I do not have that on the Subaru.
The Volvo I was driving last night had that. And it works pretty well. I mean, it works very well. But you have to trigger the button and set it on for it to work. By the way, I think the Volvo has... I like the way the toggles work in the Volvo, like the wipers and the lights, two toggles left and right. But again, I think car manufacturers need to standardize things a little bit. Porsche is putting paddles in the back of the steering wheel for certain functions of the electric motors.
Really?
Yeah. So instead of having it on a dial, because there's no shifting, they're using the paddles for other functions so that you don't have to take your hands off the wheel.
Hello, Jay.
Yes.
I do want to chime in on this one.
Sure.
I want the dimmer switch back on the floor that I hit it with my left foot. Far easier than all of these paddles. Yeah, well, I know, but all these paddles and everything get to be absurd after a while. My foot is sitting there free all the time, and I just think it was so much better when that dimmer switch was down there. That's my two cents.
Well, that could work. I mean, if you're driving a car with a stick shift, it becomes hard to push on the clutch and the lights at the same and the light dimmer on the at the same time.
Yeah, but you theoretically are in a full driving position. You're not using the clutch at a given time when you're heading into cars and dimming and undimming your lights. I mean, if you're clutching while you're going down the road like that, I'm concerned.
I still think that's not going to happen. I'm not sure I agree with you, but it had its time. It was pretty cool. I think we should be able to agree the auto dimming does work pretty well. I was surprised last night. I was coming, and it would if the street lights would just if I was on the road and it was dark and raining and I encountered a few stoplights. And the stoplight would not would not trigger the dimming of the lights. But as soon as another car, or street lights, but as soon as another car came over the hill or around the turn, sure enough, the lights dimmed. So I think it's a pretty good feature, especially for the dumb and dumber, which unfortunately there seems to be more and more of. And we won't revisit mine and Robin's beef about headlights and lack of their use, but I encountered that again last night, but I'll leave it at that. I want to touch on the safety topic, and I think it concerns everybody, and that's pedestrian crossing and pedestrians in general and pedestrian crossings. And Alice and I we had a little discussion beforehand on this topic, and I feel very strongly about pedestrians and their lack of I hate to say it, but lack of courtesy vis-a-vis drivers, and that, it seems a little to me. In the last 30 years, all of the laws have favored pedestrians, and they've gone to, I think there's an entitlement that pedestrians feel that they have, and they can cross the street whenever and wherever.
Yeah, I've seen that 100 times out there.
Really? God, am I surprised.
So
but on a
real...
more serious note, and you know, me going and having a beef with pedestrians is not quite right either. But we've seen a bunch of pedestrian crossings with the flashing lights here in Connecticut. And so I actually triggered my interest and see, okay, so what is the law? Does a pedestrian actually have the right of way if they don't use the lights to cross the street? And actually the new laws, and I don't know how new the law is, but the law in Connecticut, as far as pedestrians and pedestrian crossings is yes, pedestrians have the right of way, but they do have to signal their intention to cross the road. So they need to raise their hand or look at the driver coming at them instead of their phones, and basically what I've been saying all along, acknowledge the driver. I think people, it's the law is not clear whether you have to use the flashing lights. I think a pedestrian still has the right of way if they don't use the flashers, but you do have to show your intent to cross the street. Alice, on the other hand, feels that just by being there, she has the right of way.
Well, it's
that there would be no other reason for me to be standing at a crosswalk than for me to be intending to cross the street.
I've encountered people standing at the crosswalk edge having conversations with one another, and everybody's slowing down, and they're just doing their thing. I don't think that this entitlement should be there. A hunk of meat walking across the street and the multi-tons of metal, who's going to win every time? The metal.
Exactly.
They build these crosswalks, and I don't know how much we're spending on these ghastly crosswalks with the flashing lights and the circus and everything else going on. They should be required to push that button so that that notifies the drivers of what needs to happen next. And it's put there for a reason, and there has to be a respect from both ends. Everybody's got to be paying attention to what they're doing, and just because you think you have the right of way as a pedestrian, just remember the big piece of metal that's coming at you. You can make the choice there. Or you can decide to look and be courteous of both ends. The roads are for the cars to start with. And you know, if you're gonna be in the crosswalk and all this
I think you've made my point even clearer than I could. But so Alice is gonna be, if you see somebody in front of a crosswalk and it's Alice, keep in mind she's there for no other reason than crossing the street.
She's
absolutely
just there to taunt me.
But on a serious note, I think it is a safety concern. It's a safety issue. I think pedestrians do need to, I've said it multiple times, I will never, knock on wood, never get run over by a car. I think you can be, it can be not your fault, and it's still your responsibility to avoid a crash, whether it's two cars, whether it's a pedestrian and a car. And like you said, Mike, big metal always wins. So just keep your eyes peeled. Keep the phones in your pocket or by your side as you get closer to an intersection. But it is evolving. I mean, I think those pedestrian crossings are pretty cool. I think those lights work really well, especially at night. In Europe, they do it differently. They don't have flashing lights, but they have very powerful light beams that illuminate crosswalks at night. It's another way of doing things. And it doesn't matter how you do them, but there needs to be mutual understanding and respect. I think that's the bottom line, and I think we can agree on that. Hope to see Robin here again next week. In the meantime, have a wonderful day.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.